Evan, what is your favorite thing about North Carolina?
The Blue Ridge Mountains.
Okay, great. You're just quoting John Denver lyrics.
I was quoting an Abraham Lincoln speech. Thank you.
Fair enough. I say Denver, you say Lincoln. I view them as similar literary giants.
Sure.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals, the pork is pulled, the sauce is vinegar edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. Yes, I'm a low country mustard-based man, but if we must, we must. When in Rome.
That's right.
Today, we are talking about the North Carolina Courage on NWSL Season Preview Week, the second part of our doubleheader with Kim McCauley of The Guardian and the Transfer Flow newsletter. Kim is amazing. It was so great to get all of her insights about how these very odd groups of players get put together. We walk through the Jaden Shaw, Ashley Sanchez tactical dilemma. We walk through the Shinomi Koyama, Riley Jackson, Brianna Pinto midfield question mark, and wonder who's gonna be the striker. The Courage, a well-built machine, but is it a Jaguar or is it a BMW? Does it fall apart all the time, or is it a very pretty looking lemon, or does it actually have a solid engine underneath?
It's a great question, and one that we have to explore, because I think that there has been a lot of hype about this North Carolina team, and I'm not sure you or I have bought into it.
I think I end up being the high man on this, just because I think great players tend to win out. And so you have Jaden Shaw, you've got a shot, you know, and she has better players around her than she did last year at San Diego. So they're in a great spot for a good playoff position. But how far they can get into the playoffs is another matter.
Well, without further ado, let's talk with Kim McCauley.
To join us one more time, we are very happy to welcome back writer for The Guardian and for the Transfer Flow newsletter and former head of analytics at Angel City FC, Kim McCauley. Hi, Kim.
Hey, how's it going?
Do you believe the hype about the Sean Nahas era of the North Carolina Courage? They are a team that has staked their own tactical and stylistic identity. They are an extremely high possession team. They have been that way since he took over, more or less, and really are very outspoken about the way that they do things and the belief in how they do things. And yet they have not won a playoff game under him. They've never finished higher than third in a smaller playoff pool. And the underlying numbers don't always back up the rhetoric. So play devil's advocate for me here. When I see a team that comes in fifth on points, but 10th in expected points, which is the biggest gap in those two metrics of any team in 2024, what am I missing?
Well, I think that there's a lot about the way they play that I think is good and that I enjoy watching. I think they have good defenders, good midfielders, good playmakers. The biggest problem that they had last season, and that I think we're going to talk about them probably still having this season, is who's going to put the ball in the goal?
Is that the only thing that seems to have held them back during Nahas' tenure? Are they really just a striker away from being one of the more dominant teams in the league?
I think it's difficult to tell because they haven't had that striker. I think they're a striker away from getting into the conversation, from, you know, being pretty definitively at least the fourth or fifth best team in the league. And from there, maybe we could get some more information about what they would need to do to take the next step to compete with the, you know, Kansas Cities and Orlandos. But I think it is the biggest missing piece. I think that if they were to sign a top-class striker during the summer, it would see them become, you know, certainly a locked-in playoff team and one that could threaten the top of the league. But I don't think we really have enough information yet to know what else may or may not be lacking in this team, because when you don't have a really good center forward, you kind of can't figure out what's going right or wrong with the rest of the team, because it's like such a huge piece.
My skepticism about the North Carolina team comes entirely from that root question that you've just asked, which is, I think Orlando adding Barbara Banda did complete the team. I'm not sure North Carolina adding Barbara Banda would complete this team. Moreover, I think a good place to go from here is Orlando has Haley Carter. North Carolina is GM-less?
I like how you said that with a question mark at the end of the sentence. GMless question mark.
Like, who is making decisions here, and what decision making are you seeing done?
I have absolutely no idea who makes the decisions. I assume that Sean Nahas has been asked to put on a bit of a head scout slash GM hat in addition to his head coaching duties, but ultimately it's got to be somebody else, whether that be the owner, Stephen Malik, or another executive who is doing the actual business negotiations and finalizing contracts.
And I can actually jump in here and let everybody know that it's Steve Malik himself with the assistant general manager, Bobby Hammond, who has been running the offseason this winter. But no plans have been announced about even getting an interim GM / sporting director in place, much less a permanent one.
It's very old school. It's very much the way NWSL worked in the early days, where the head coach would also have to be a head scout / assistant GM, and then an owner or maybe somebody who is like a chief financial officer would do then the actual business side of the GM job.
And perhaps it's not a coincidence that Malik is the longest tenured NWSL owner right now. He's having owned the team since 2017. Every other team that can trace their history back to those days have changed owners since then. And Malik definitely seems to have that philosophy in his mind.
Do you think it is possible in the modern NWSL to win with that kind of organizational and leadership apparatus?
Not consistently. Maybe over one particular season, because you got it right on one or two players and they went crazy. But, you know, over a 3-year period, can you consistently make the playoffs and be competitive to win trophies for, you know, several years in a row with that structure? Absolutely not.
So let's talk about what Malik and Hammond have done this winter. The headline, of course, is the trade to get Jaden Shaw over to the team. They've also signed Brooklyn Courtnell out of college, made an international transfer for the young midfielder Shinomi Koyama, signed Hannah Bedford from out of restricted free agency. And then on the other side of the coin, Caroline chose not to resign. She went to Manchester City. Narumi Miura chose not to resign. She went to the Washington Spirit. Bianca St-George, mutual termination of her contracts. Does this work? Is this a logical offseason for a team, given where they were at the end of last year, to have had if they expect to remain competitive?
Well, I think the center forward piece that we touched on is kind of a big issue here, right? Because it's not a new one. It doesn't, not something that came out of nowhere where, you know, a player they thought was going to re-sign with them opted to leave. Obviously, that was the case with Caroline, but I think, A, they kind of knew that she was going to run down her contract, and B, not a center forward. But they didn't have that situation at center forward. They knew they needed one. They haven't gotten one. And that's going to be a big problem. Hannah Bedford has played plenty of center forward, but with no disrespect for her, to her, I don't think that she is the answer of, you know, okay, a team that's lacking a top goal scorer in that area, I don't think she necessarily fills that need. And strangely, they traded the closest thing they had to a recognized starting level center forward in Haley Hopkins. So there are some good things here in this offseason, and we're going to talk about them. Obviously, Jaden Shaw, the biggest one, but not getting a 9 is a huge failure.
Ashley Sanchez coming over last year, the season that she ended up having felt like a kind of rebirth or a rediscovery for her, where she really did get to be the primary focal point in that offense. Now with Jaden Shaw coming in, who I think shares a number of qualities with Ashley Sanchez, how do you possibly get the ball to both of them in adequate supply?
It's not just those two. It's Koyama, it's Matsukubo. Like, all of them would probably prefer to play the number 10 position. Now, they've all played something else. They're not, you know, players that lack versatility, but I think if you asked all of them, what is your best position, they would all say 10. And that's the position that all of them have played the most minutes at in their pro careers. Not that I'm going to criticize North Carolina for acquiring Jaden Shaw. Like, if you are the North Carolina Courage and you get a call from San Diego and they say, Jaden Shaw has requested a trade, you are one of the teams that she's willing to go to, you make an offer and you try to sign her, because an opportunity like that doesn't come along very often. Jaden Shaw is one of the best young players in the league, but how does she fit into this team with the existing pieces? I have absolutely no idea. And that's a very tricky puzzle for Sean Nahas to solve, because I don't know how you're going to keep everyone happy. Like, somebody's probably going to be pretty upset with their role, unless they're, you know, they're smashing people and they're in first place. That always keeps people happy. But we don't think that's going to happen. I don't think any of us think that's going to happen. So more likely than not, somebody's going to be really upset with their role.
Okay, in your mind, of those four you listed who play number 10, let's just call them the 40, who climbs Corpse Mountain and deserves to have that number 10 role?
I would lean towards Shaw. I think if you're saying just straight up who deserves it, it's pretty close between Shaw and Sanchez. But I think the drop-off from moving to another position is greater with Shaw than it is for Sanchez. And that's kind of unfair to Sanchez. Honestly, Ashley Sanchez has kind of had an unfair career all around. She gets drafted to Washington Spirit, where she has back-to-back coaches who end up getting fired for misconduct issues. Then she finally cements a role in a fairly stable team, gets traded unexpectedly, again, cements a role in a stable team, and then they trade for somebody else in her position. Through all of this, Ashley Sanchez has done nothing wrong and has been a very good player. This kind of sucks for her. But of those two players, she's the one who is a little better on the left wing, a little better as a false nine. So I think Shaw is the one you have to build around as the 10, and you have to find what secondary role works for Sanchez.
Expanding from that, there's a broader attacking pool that is sort of just at best a compromise for every attacking position. So between Bedford, Courtney Vine, Monica Matsukubo, Tyler Lucy, if we say Shaw and Sanchez are two of them, who are the other two that take the other two attacking spots? Who makes the most sense?
I think Lucy's going to get a lot of playing time, whether it be on the right wing or at the nine, because she's such a great presser. She's so fit. Like, she just runs for days. And if you don't have an ideal fit at a particular position, that's a pretty good backup plan. You're always going to have a job. You're always going to be useful. I would lean towards her as the nine and Vine as the right winger to start. But with any configuration of these players, I can find some upside and some problems. Like, there's no easy solution here. And I think they're all going to play a lot. Like, I don't think Nahas has in his head, like, this is the solution. This is my starting 11. I think it's going to be very situational based on opponents and individual form.
Okay, so if Shaw playing the 10 is the best possible outcome, what is the worst possible outcome for Shaw in this situation?
I don't know about you guys. I really don't like Shaw on the left wing when she's played there before.
No.
And she's played there quite a bit. And I think the drop-off from when she plays in the center to when she plays in the left is pretty significant. I could see a case for Shaw as an effective false nine. I could even see a case for moving her deeper and making her more of an eight. Her defensive numbers are actually pretty decent, and her passing from deep is very good. But I think the worst-case scenario is if Shaw is the starting left winger.
So let's talk about the midfield for a minute. Shinomi Koyama is here. Riley Jackson got less than 500 regular season minutes. Narumi Mira is no longer available. And Denise O'Sullivan is starting to decline. And she's at that age where you would expect that. Is Jackson ready for prime time to partner next to O'Sullivan? Do you think Shinomi should maybe get a chance to run out there? Is she too progressively minded for what they actually need positionally? How do you balance the midfield? Who are the players who are going to be getting the ball to the attacking unit?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible that Koyama plays some eight. I think it's more likely that she rotates in the more attacking roles. I agree with you that Denise O'Sullivan is probably not quite the player she used to be. That doesn't mean she's not going to still be, an effective NWSL rotational player, but, in contention for best defensive midfielder in the league, probably not in the cards anymore. As long as she's even a remotely useful rotation player, they want her around for her leadership. But I think we can probably expect a drop-off. The case for this team being actually good, not just sneaking into the playoffs, but significantly improving on last year and being, in contention for fourth or fifth best team in the league, is going to rely on, first of all, Riley Jackson taking a step forward, like you mentioned. And I think she will play more minutes and she will be more effective, but still a very young, inexperienced player. I don't think we know how big that leap is going to be. And if she's going to be a clear starter quality defensive midfielder. The other thing is they need to start getting more out of Brianna Pinto, who you didn't mention, a player who was once like one of the top prospects in the country, who was expected to be a future national team midfielder and who has been a solid pro, but who hasn't really reached that level, I think, because her like medium range progressive passing game hasn't quite developed. She is very fit, very hardworking player, wins a decent amount of tackles, decent, you know, crashing the box as like a goal assist threat, but that like middle piece, the passing game, has not quite developed yet, and they need her to take a step forward as like an all-around eight if they're going to be a really good team.
It's so funny to talk about the two crucial elements of this midfield, Riley Jackson and Brianna Pinto stepping up, when both of them are not great passers as is, with a coach who values that above literally all else. Do you feel like this is a team that can mold players in that direction, or do you feel like this is an outside acquisition that needs to be made? Do you feel like these players can make that leap, or is this, we need to look at the market in summer and see if we can't add someone?
As much as I would like to believe in Brianna Pinto making that step forward because of how much I enjoyed watching her at North Carolina, she's been there long enough that I think we have to say the evidence we have suggests that they are not able to develop central midfielders in that way.
And it's why I'm really concerned about the development of Riley Jackson, who at 19 years old is already a defensive stud. Tremendous. I think registered a 0.1 defensive net G plus. Very, very good. But has yet to add the passing element to her game that I know that Nahas covets. When you think about player development, do you feel like Jackson has that in her locker to develop?
Yeah, I mean, she certainly has the like core technical skills. It's just a matter of developing the vision and the quick decision making. To be fair to her and to North Carolina, that often comes later for deeper lying central midfielders. It's pretty common for even players who start getting a lot of professional minutes when they're 18 years old to not like really develop that piece until they're 21, 22 years old.
Going to the defense, it is surprising to look at underlying data regarding the team-wide defensive performance, because Kaylee Kurtz and Malia Berkeley have like developed a reputation for being among the better defensive center back pairings in the league. That backline also basically didn't change last year between Berkeley, Kurtz, Feli Rauch, and Ryan Williams. If you look at the amount of non-penalty XG they allowed across 2024, they were kind of mid-table. They're basically average in terms of the quality of the chances that they conceded. It feels to me like Eric has always talked about using possession as a defensive tool, and the way that you can win and get results if you don't have much goal scoring potential is by making sure that you don't concede goals. Do we think that this back line is going to regress relative to their top line results? Will they start looking a bit more mid or league average defensively in the coming year? Or does the team level XG just kind of miss something about what Kurtz, Berkeley, Williams, and Rauch can do as a unit?
I think it depends a lot on the midfield. Maybe that seems like a little bit of a cop-out, but I think that these four are really good players. I think they're amongst the better players on the team, but your backline's only as good as what's in front of it sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard to defend when attacking players are getting the ball in space right in front of the box all the time. There's only so much your backline can do about that. I think Nahas, even more than other coaches in the league, is a believer in that possession as a form of defense thing. And his midfielders over the last couple of years have been average at performing that.
I think the thing that scares me most about this defense, and the thing that causes me to scratch my head when I see people really hyping this team up for this year, is you are rarely ever going to get a season where you get 2,100 plus minutes out of all of your defenders. And this sort of continuity, you know, like you just look at the minutes, Kaylee Kurtz, Iron Woman last year, Malia Berkeley and Ryan Williams, both 2,500 plus minutes. Feli Rauch, 2,156. And frankly, Denise O'Sullivan, who we need to throw in this mix, 2,200 minutes. The likelihood that they're able to repeat that defensive performance, which, as we've all said, wasn't necessarily that great, just through raw health, puts huge question marks up for me. Moreover, I think the possibility of having both Shaw and Sanchez on the field is you just have to be comfortable with giving the ball away more. These are attackers who very much want to initiate offensive actions that are higher risk. And so I see this sort of knock-on effect where you have two players who need the ball in basically the same position, who will inevitably give the ball away to an aging defense that won't be as healthy as it once was. And then finally, when you get to Casey Murphy, she just had a very great season, but maybe a very overperformy season that is like key for regression. Is there anything in that argument that I've laid out that you push back on?
The only thing I would push back on is I like their center back depth. I think that they can survive an injury or two. Less so with the fullbacks. I think if either Rauch or Williams were to suffer a long-term injury, that would be pretty damaging for their season. But I think that Macy Bell and Talia Sade and Brooklyn Cortinal are very capable backups if they were to have a bad center back injury.
I wonder, too, if we stay on the center back depth point, if maybe Malia Berkeley moves into defensive midfield, if O'Sullivan has some injury struggles, or if Shinomi or Riley Jackson aren't clicking. Berkeley has played as a number six before. She's had success there. And were that to happen, let's lay out the hypothetical, between Cortinal, Bell, and Stoddy, who would you want to step in next to Kaylee Kurtz and maybe give a little bit more on Cortinal, who is their college signing out of USC?
Yeah, I mentioned this in the Portland episode, and I'll say it again. Relying on rookie center backs is generally not great, and if a rookie center back has a bad rookie season, you shouldn't write them off. There have been a lot of center backs in this league who have struggled as rookies and who in their age 23, age 24 seasons have been excellent. I think it's the position that is the hardest to make the transition from college to pro, but I think that Cortinal's a really solid all-around player. But if there was an injury, I think that Bell would be the one to step in. Or if Berkeley were to move up to defensive midfield, I think that Bell would be the one to step in. She kind of had a slow recovery from an ACL tear in college. Before that ACL tear, she was, you know, considered one of the top prospects in the women's national team under 23 pool. Maybe she lost a half step of pace as a result of it. But I know she's still thought of very highly there, and just in general, really athletic player, really tall, really good in the air, really good set piece threat. Depending on how they feel about how she's playing her preseason, I think that would be a really good move for them. I know that Berkeley didn't play much defensive midfielder last year. Most of her minutes there were the previous year, but I really liked her when she played there, and I kind of hope they consider it.
Bell only got less than 400 minutes in 2024 across her stint both with Gotham and with North Carolina, mostly played right back. Is that just merely a function of that slow ACL recovery, or was she maybe finding other struggles in integrating into the professional life?
At Gotham, there were just a lot of players in front of her. And then she gets to North Carolina, there's also a lot of players in front of her. But again, we don't have enough minutes from her to really be able to tell whether or not she has lost a considerable amount of that athleticism or if there are any other problems with her. But in her limited minutes, I've thought she's looked like a very high potential player, but she needs more minutes for us to really make any kind of determination. If she doesn't get more, well, there's probably a good reason. Things happening in training that we can't see.
I think it's that time. All right, Kim, you're Sean Nahas. You've just taken some sleepy time tea to bed, and it's not working. What's keeping you up at night?
We said it at the top. Who's going to score goals? They haven't solved the problem. I think that last year, their non-penalty XG leader was Ashley Sanchez, who was ostensibly supposed to be their main playmaker, not main goal scorer. They didn't have a single player get above 5 non-penalty XG, and they traded away the player who I'm pretty sure was second on non-penalty XG for them. This is a good team in so many areas, but at the end of the day, somebody's got to put the ball in the back of the net. I don't know who's going to do it.
Can you just expand upon the Haley Hopkins trade and why that was so insane?
Because who else is going to play striker? Like, not that I think Haley Hopkins is like a good rotational striker in NWSL. I don't think she's a superstar, but she's a solid bench striker. She's somebody who deserves to have a job in the league. I don't think they have anyone on their roster who is better than her.
What does your gut tell you about the likelihood that they will go and get a number 9 in the summer?
Well, I think they will. And something we haven't touched on is that even though this team doesn't have a GM. Sean Nahas has a pretty good reputation with agents and with players, and he's got good connections with agents. I think they're going to find a way to sign somebody, probably somebody from Europe whose season ends in May or June. I think very, very, very likely that they sign a good center forward in June. But, I mean, pretty long to survive without a real recognized nine in your team.
Moment of truth. Where are they finishing in the table?
I'm between sixth or seventh.
Throw a dart at the wall. Where does it land?
I'm going to say six because I'm such a believer in Sean Sanchez. As big as their problems are, as much as I think one of them might get frustrated by not being able to play in their best role, the bottom half of the league does not have two players that good.
Eric?
I'll try not to make this some long-winded answer, but I'll say that as we've gone through all of these previews, this being the last that we are recording, North Carolina felt like one of the more stable-placed teams. But because of the jumble that has happened with all of the injuries and just changes, I am now finding myself even questioning that. But I will stick with my primary instinct, which is to say there are so many things about this team that cause me headaches and that make me feel like a crazy person. But yeah, I think they're probably sixth. I agree with Kim.
I'm the high man here. I have them fifth. I believe in great players being great. The thing that, yeah, I know, shocking. The thing that held Jaden Shaw back last year at San Diego is because the talent was at a level far lower than what North Carolina can provide her. So I have a feeling that she will be able to figure it out just enough for them to get that highest place of the away quarterfinalists. But we should also say that the last time we ran the projection models, both Trevor Larner's ELO model and American Soccer Analysis's model, they came out sixth in the ELO and 10th in the ASA model. But in each model, the number of projected points separating fifth from 10th is basically 2 points.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the difference between 5th and 10th in this league is not much.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's the one. This is where we ask the 90-50-10. We've sort of laid out our 50 case. What is the 90th percentile outcome for North Carolina this year?
I would say 4th is like the higher end, because I think there's a scenario where the changes that Gotham have gone through are like worse than we think they are. I think that the top three are the top three. And I think we probably all agree on that. Yeah. But I would say that fourth is their ceiling. The 10th percentile, I mean, it can be lower than 10th, honestly. They get two or three bad injuries and suddenly this team doesn't look very good.
I think if they don't add a striker in summer and those injuries pile up, this is a team that like can't score goals and won't be able to prevent goals going the other direction as well as they did last season. They scare me in that regard. The 90th, I sort of think that like 6th is both where the 50th percentile is and not that far from the 90th percentile. Short of signing like, I don't know, Bunny Shaw in summer, I don't see this team like making some giant leap forward. So yeah, probably 5th is my cap for them.
I've got them 3rd for my 90th percentile.
Wow.
And it's a 90th percentile prediction, so it's extremely unlikely to happen. You know, if everybody in Orlando regresses to the mean and maybe they pick up a couple injuries and Gotham has their struggles, they could sneak in, especially if Jaden Shaw just turns on the jets and makes it impossible for any forward to make a bad off-ball run, such as the quality of her service, which is not crazy to think that she could pull that off either. And then you go out and you get a big striker in the summertime. You've survived up until then. And then you can, you know, you just start bagging goals. So 3rd place, obviously it's not going to happen, but I think you could really stretch it to that point. 10th percentile is the back line doesn't stay healthy. O'Sullivan really collapses. And you never figure out how to get Shaw and Sanchez playing the same way. And they don't go and sign a legitimate striker because they don't want to spend the money because that's how Steve Malik rolls these days. And then they're like 12th.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, we're giving the 10th percentile projection of where they finish. But what does this team even look like in a game where all of Shaw, Sanchez, and Roush are unavailable for selection?
Like, yeah, that's rough.
That's a nightmare.
It's a really bad team. It does not take much for the bottom to fall out here.
I will say, we all know what the look of a distribution plot with its peaks and its tails. Mm-hmm. My 50th percentile outcome is a lot closer to the 10th percentile tail than it is to the 90th. That upper echelon after the peak of the bell curve really tails off pretty steeply for me. Well, We will find out what will occur on opening weekend with the Courage. You can read Kim's writing on the NWSL at The Guardian and her Broso content at the Transfer Flow newsletter. Kim McCauley, wonderful to see you.
Yeah, great to see you guys.
I can't believe Kim agreed to do these podcasts with us. And I'm so grateful. She's the best.
Yeah. I haven't seen her face to face in, God, almost 10 years. It was awesome to catch up just on that level alone. I'm very happy to have Kim kicking around in the ASA world a little bit as well. She wrote some of the season previews for the site, so you can check those out at AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com.
If you're a listener to this show and you're looking for yet more NWSL content, highly recommend going over to the ASA website and reading those previews that people, really good writers, put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to create.
A great many of them were our guests, but they wrote about different teams than they spoke about on the show. So you get even a wider view on how they see the season unfolding. But in the meantime, we finish up NWSL season preview week with Gotham FC and Jenna Tinelli. Keep your ears open for those. Join our Patreon for only $6 a month or $60 a year, which gets you 4 bonus episodes every single month, as well as access to our Discord server and our semi-regular YouTube live streams. You can click the link in the show notes for that. Follow us on social media at XZoneGoals. Email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. And do all the things you're supposed to do with podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. Review us and follow us in the podcatcher of your choice. Tell all of your friends about us. You will not regret it. If you've had fun with these season previews, expect more of the same high-level content throughout the entire NWSL season.
Also, if you're a fan of this pod and you're looking for just a little bit more of Evan Davis, he'll be appearing on another podcast.
I'm on full-time with Meg Linehan on The Athletic, previewing the West Coast teams, including Utah. And that should be in your podcast feeds, so go check that out, too.
All right, guys. Bye.